This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. My guest today, Julie Simon, is the author of When Food is Comfort and also the Emotional Eater's Repair Manual. I see a lot of people suffering from emotional eating in my practice. As a shamanic practitioner, of course, my role is to help people heal elements of their soul that may have been, let's just say, left in a traumatic experience. And although I do not know much about emotional eating, we're going to get that education today, folks. I do attribute a lot of it to childhood trauma. And I know for myself, I went through ups and downs of what I call bad habits from emotional eating. I needed help repairing some wounds from my childhood. And I know that my husband has too. And hopefully some of those questions will be answered today when Julie and I have this conversation. Her latest book, When Food is Comfort, Nurture Yourself Mindfully, Rewire Your Brain, and End Emotional Eating, really gives some awesome information and insight as well as tools to help you heal from this and examples of real life people that she's worked with over the years who she's been able to help get past these issues and maybe recognize triggers. So I'm probably tearing this all up and I really want to just welcome Julie here. So welcome to Soulful Living, Julie.
Hi there. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Thank you. Well, you know, two things. Let's just jump right in, right? Let's give the listeners a little bit of a history about you, and then let's answer that question, what is emotional eating?
Yes, you know, well, I was thinking when you were talking that, you know, so many people, like you're saying, have wounds from childhood, and yet, you know, when we're standing at the sink, you know, with a carton of ice cream and we're, you know, having some ice cream late at night, it doesn't seem like, you know, how can this be about something so long ago, you know? Mm-hmm. And most people will say, you know, I just like the taste of the food. You know, I think the problem is I just, you know, I like sweets or I'm a foodie, right?
Right.
And I say to everyone who says that to me, we all like the taste of food. I mean, if you're not an ice cream eater, maybe you're a cake eater or something. We all like food. We all like the taste of food. We all have certain foods that we really enjoy. And so it really isn't just about enjoying the food, but I really understand why one might think, how can this go back so far ago? And it really, in a way, it doesn't necessarily go back so far. It really, if we fast forward it today, it's really about something being out of balance somewhere today. And when we're trying to resolve that, sometimes we need to go back in time and understand how things got to where they are today. How did things get out of balance? So that's really what this is all about. And when you ask me about my own past, I spent a good portion of my own life stuck in a cycle of overeating, gaining weight, and dieting. And I found out over time that I was eating emotionally. I was using food to calm and soothe myself. It helped numb the pain of unpleasant emotions and self-doubts and negative thoughts and general stress. It altered my brain chemistry. And because it's so pleasurable, it was a good distraction.
Right.
I was basically filling up an inner emptiness and a restlessness I felt with food. And so over time, you know, I intuitively thought early in my life that there has to be an answer to my overeating, to my weight gain, to my dieting, to my counting calories all the time. There's got to be an answer to this. It doesn't make sense that we're designed to be in this battle with ourselves. It just doesn't make sense. I knew animals in the wild, you know, could maintain their weight in an optimum range. Our ancestors maintained their weight. None of our ancestors, even probably most of our grandmothers, you know, didn't weigh and measure food. They didn't count calories and carbohydrate grams. They didn't weigh and measure their bodies. So I thought, something's off with this picture, and I need to go off and figure out all the pieces of the puzzle. And as I did that in my own life, I began to understand that I had entered adulthood missing certain self-care skills, like the ability to move through unpleasant emotional states, comfort and soothe myself, reframe self-defeating thoughts, and regulate my nervous system. And while my parents were well-intentioned, they were also missing these skills. And then to add insult to injury, I also had inherited body and brain imbalances that made some of these unhealthy comfort foods, like flour products and sugar products and stimulants like caffeine, made those both attractive to me and addictive to me. So it took many years of study, therapy, and visits to healthcare practitioners for me to understand and resolve all the pieces of the overeating puzzle in my own life. And over time, I really wanted to develop programs and write books to help people resolve all these pieces as well.
And so you became a therapist and a life coach and, you know, in the process created not just the books, but a 12-week program, seminars, workshops, all kinds of different tools to really help people learn to nurture themselves and show up in the world differently. What are some of the ways that you do that? You know, what are some of the techniques, I guess, I would say, that help people move past that place of emotional eating? And I have one more question before we jump into that. You know, this is about, we've been talking about overeating. Does the same principle kind of apply to like anorexia and bulimia?
Well, it really does. I mean, emotional eating, you know, is, let's define emotional eating. And I think that will really help the listener understand that even before we get into the tools. So if you regularly eat when you're not hungry, mm-hmm. you eat beyond full, or if you choose to eat unhealthy comfort foods, there's a good chance that your eating has an emotional component to it. Now, a bulimic, you know, will be binging, and so that applies the same, overeating. And someone who's starving themselves still has the same trigger, still has the same urge to turn to food, but has just adopted a very rigid approach to handling all of this. So there's still anorexics and bulimics and everyone, compulsive overeaters, are still emotional eaters. So if you mm-hmm. have a craving or an exaggerated desire to eat in the absence of true physiological hunger cues, that's an emotional appetite. So how would you know if you're an emotional eater? I'll give you some examples. You use food as a tranquilizer to dull emotions that are difficult to cope with, such as anxiety, anger, sadness, frustration, loneliness, guilt, shame, and even happiness and excitement. You use food to calm yourself when you're experiencing unpleasant bodily sensations, like agitation or nervousness or muscle tension. You turn to food for soothing and comfort. Now, many people do this. They turn to food for pleasure, escape, fulfillment, and excitement. That's what I was saying earlier. People say, no, I just love food. You know, it's just pleasurable. If you eat when you're stressed out, maybe you use food to silence negative, critical, self-defeating thoughts and quiet your mind. Perhaps you eat when you're feeling overwhelmed and kind of paralyzed, can't get to that to-do list. Maybe you eat to distract yourself from low motivation states like boredom, lethargy, or apathy. You might eat as a way to procrastinate. Perhaps you eat because your life lacks purpose and meaning or passion and inspiration. Maybe you're trying to fill up an inner emptiness with food. Maybe you eat because you have so much regret regarding your life, or you feel deprived. Perhaps you're rebelling against someone or something. Maybe you're punishing yourself. Perhaps you're eating to reward yourself. So that's an example of all the ways that we might be using food. And of course, people always say to me, doesn't everyone emotionally eat a little bit? And I say, yes, we all do. And the problem really is it affecting your health or is it affecting your weight? If it's not, then there's probably not a problem with a little bit of emotional eating. But most people who come to me are either struggling with their weight or they're struggling with health challenges. And they know that they have to take the weight off or they have to change their eating habits. And they're having trouble making those changes. And that's why, as you said before, I have programs. I developed my 12-week program because I wanted to address the mind, the body, and the spirit imbalances that underlie our use of food. And my first book, The Emotional Eater's Repair Manual, is based on that program. I wrote that book so that people all over the world, not just everyone in Los Angeles, you know, could benefit from those skills, principles, and practices that I teach.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, are there, you know, we've talked about emotional, but is there scientific data, you know, like is it like a combination as well of biological, you know, neurological, like the whole, there's a whole gamut, and that when we aren't nurtured and those traumas come with us, all of this kind of comes into play?
Yes. I mean, all overeating behaviors, so snacking mindlessly, snacking excessively, overeating at meals, binge eating, all overeating behaviors are complex, and there's mm-hmm. neurological, biological, social, psychological, cultural, all kinds of genetic, all kinds of pieces to the overeating puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone, you know, that will want to figure out all those pieces, and so there's going to be some biological pieces. In terms of the emotional part, you know, that's where we want to dive in and we want to begin to understand what skills are you missing? You know, why is it when you make a decision, when you say, I want to set limits with myself, and I've decided that at night I'll allow myself one cookie, but no more, or I want to stop eating sugar at night, mm-hmm. or whatever way you say, I want to regulate my behavior. Why is it that you're not successful in doing that? Why can you not just set that limit and stick with it? And I think that if you cannot just set that limit, like someone I work with who is saying, you know, at her work, she has a lot of sweets and stuff, and when she's working, she grabs and grabs. And so when I say to her, why do you think you can't just say, okay, at work I don't touch all the stuff that's around, right? And I know that's challenging. I'm not minimizing how hard that is when all those foods are around. Why do you think you can't stop that? And that's the big question. We call that self-regulation, right?
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
what research is showing is that, and brain science is showing, that we're now understanding the crucial role that our early social and emotional environment plays in the development of these imbalanced eating patterns. So when we don't receive consistent and sufficient emotional nurturance during our early years, our brain and our nervous system become wired for a kind of high reactivity, and it makes it more difficult for us to soothe ourselves, to comfort ourselves, to regulate our behaviors. And it leaves us at greater risk for turning to food as a source of comfort. So we might be at work, and one of the reasons we're grabbing is that we're uncomfortable with that kind of high energy all day. And so we're actually turning to food to calm ourselves or nurture ourselves or soothe ourselves. Or we're having stress at work, and we're turning to food to regulate our nervous system. So we're using food for a lot of reasons, and food wasn't designed for those reasons. Skills. We need skills.
And so that's where you talk about mastering the skills of self regulation. So we learn these techniques so that when there's sweets at the office, we can say, I'm not going to do that. You know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, my husband was trying to make a change in his own eating habits, and I was supporting him. And he's kind of like an all or nothing guy. You know, he either has to have all sugar or no sugar. You know, he's like, I can't eat just one. So I said, all right, well, I'm just going to eat one Dove chocolate a day, and I'll eat that in the other room so it's not, you know, interfering with you. But as you were talking about that, that's kind of what I was seeing, was like learning techniques that could help him be stronger in that, you know, and move past whatever he's brought with him this whole time, so that he doesn't necessarily have to be eventually an all or nothing type of person, where he can enjoy life where he's at. And maybe that comes in with something that you talk about in the book, inner nurturing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, but before I do, let me just say something about what you described with your husband. So some people are more susceptible. Remember I said that overeating, you know, there are a lot of pieces to the overeating puzzle. So some of it can, you know, there is the biology to it. So some people are much more susceptible to certain foods, let's say like sugar, flour, caffeine. And so for those people, they may find that even just one bite, that's how I am with flour. You know, like flour, I could just shoot it up in my vein like crack, you know. Like take one bite of a scone and my head says, get more now, right? Mm-hmm, and even though I'm a 100% fully recovered emotional eater, I still have that chemical reaction to certain foods. And so if I eat a bite of a scone, I still feel the incredible surge of feel-good brain chemicals, and I hear a voice that says, let's buy some of this and take it home, and, you know, I still feel all of that. So your husband may have some food addiction or sensitivities that, you know, make him susceptible to food addiction. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a little more challenging for that group, because they're really going to need not to have a lot of those foods around, because they do have a susceptibility to them. But also the good news is that if we work on some of those self-care skills that we talked about, we're also going to rewire the brain. So the way the brain got wired early on, because we didn't get that consistent and sufficient emotional nurturance, and our brain got wired for high reactivity, the good news is that the skills that I teach help to rewire the brain. They help to develop parts of the brain, the self-soothing, self-regulating functions of the brain, and connect the circuitry of the brain better so that you have better management of those things. So what does that look like down the road? It looks like your favorite foods are around, and a part of you says, "Ooh, I would really love to have that scone," right? So this is how it maybe looks for me. I would see plate of big fluffy scones, and a part of me, said, what I call the feeling self, says, "Ooh, I'd love to have a scone," and I can very quickly access a very nurturing voice in my head that says, "You can certainly have that, sweetie, but let's not forget that that kind of shoots up the chemicals, and you're going to have some intense cravings if we have it, so maybe it's better to pass," right? And that's very easy for me to make that choice today. There was a time where in my journey where that wasn't easy. And why is it easy? Because my brain has become rewired. So I have very easy access to a kind, nurturing, limit-setting voice in my head. So all the skills, there are 7 mindfulness skills in this new book, When Food is Comfort, and they're designed to practice in order so that you learn, so that you develop the skills, and at the same time while you're developing the skills, you're rewiring your brain. So the really better than great news is that down the road it becomes much easier to set gentle limits with yourself.
I can really appreciate that and relate to it, and I feel like it's kind of it's a practice, you know. It's a practice in creating new habits and releasing old habits. You know, it's a quote keeps coming up for me the last couple of weeks. It's and I don't even know where it originated from, but it's kind of like learn, unlearn, relearn. And this work, again, listeners, I'm chatting with Julie Simon. We're talking about her work, When Food is Comfort. You'll find all of her information here at the Soulful Living page. And we're talking about Overeating Recovery, which is also the name of your website. And so I see that as it's learning, unlearning, and relearning, and releasing habits and patterns and replacing them with empowering strategies that we can incorporate into our lives lifelong, you know, recognizing when you take a bite of that scone and you know you're going to want the whole thing. Don't buy the bag, right? And as we, you know, kind of get down to the wire here, we've only got about 5 minutes left. I want to ask, how can families, how can your loved ones support us on the process? You know, I know with, for me personally, I did whatever it took to help my husband, you know, not bring things in, listen to him, give him compassion, whatever support he needed. What are some ways that our loved ones can help us on that journey?
I think one of the best ways is to point us in the direction of where we could learn those skills, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. if we don't have those skills and we're struggling with emotional eating, we are going to basically be trying to white knuckle it. Mm-hmm. And that's not what recovery looks like. We're either going to try and white knuckle it. We're going to go on and off our favorite foods. We're going to try and pick diets periodically to get some weight off. Pointing loved ones in the direction, I just had a mother call me about her daughter. And I said, you know, she may want to take my 12-week program, you know, and really learn these skills. We learn self-care skills like connecting to ourselves in a nurturing way. So if your husband is wanting to eat ice cream in the evening, we learn to find out what is going on with me when I want to head for that ice cream. What actual feelings am I having about the night, about my life? You know, what we go inward, we pop the hood and we find out what's going on inside. Mm-hmm. We learn how to address those emotions. We learn how to find out what our true non-food authentic needs are and how we can meet them. And critical in terms of rewiring the brain is we learn to develop an inner nurturing voice. Most emotional eaters don't have a solid inner nurturing voice. They have an inner critic,
right,
an inner indulger that says, yeah, let's go get the ice cream. But that inner nurturing voice that also sets limits for us is not well developed. So loved ones can point those they care about in the direction of going somewhere, doing something, or picking up a book and understanding what's going on with you and your eating. It's not about finding another diet.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what so many people do, is they run that roller coaster, you know, of the next fad diet, and instead of checking in and like you said, you know, let's see what's going on here emotionally. Okay. So we've only got about a few minutes left. And if you could offer just one piece of advice to an emotional eater, really, it sounds like in recovery period, right? To people that are in recovery. But if you could offer one piece of advice in particular for people that are emotional eaters and looking to recover from that, what would you say?
Well, I would definitely want to give them hope that there is 100% recovery out there. You do not have to battle this battle the rest of your days. There's 100% recovery out there. Keep the faith on that. Know that there are people that have walked in your shoes ahead of you, like myself.
And, right.
But remember that you've got to start today to build those skills, that it's not magic and it's not a quick fix, but it's a forever fix. There is a forever fix to this struggle. But you got to get started today on building those skills and take your time and know that it's going to take some time, but that it's doable.
Yeah. Well, thank you for showing up. Thank you for doing that. I look at it as you are giving people hope, you know, and that they're able to look at handling challenges differently, you know, and turning on that nurturing voice. So I really thank you for showing up and doing that work. Listeners, you can connect with Julie here at the Soulful Living page at Empower Radio. I'd really love to have you back and really talk about the Emotional Eater's Repair Manual as well. So we'll work on getting you back here and being able to help people along the path. I know that that's part of your passion, and I can see what a difference it's made in your own life. So thank you for answering that call and showing up, Julie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. It's my pleasure to share this journey with your listeners and hopefully give them some hope that they can resolve their overeating or emotional
really move
eating.
Beyond the preoccupations with it and learn that, as you said, you know, full recovery is possible, and you're going to show them how. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you.